Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:51 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 16th. So the Fed minutes came out today and it looks like they're heading for additional rate hikes. And the 10-year yield was up another 4 basis points, so clearing the 4.25% level. So this is clearly highlighting that the break above the 4% level is being sustained. Now, when we look at it just on a simple daily chart, we had the upside Q reversal 5 days ago, and it has followed through on the upside. So we had a downside Q reversal at the beginning of the month that was holding out the prospect that we were going to have a failed upside break. And then that was totally reversed only 4 days later. So that'll tell us, or I guess that's a very clear representation of just how much indecision there is in the market right now, and a lot of debate about where the trajectory of policy is likely to go. So let's try and put some sense into what exactly is happening. I'm posting today a podcast from Bridgewater where they're talking about the pace with which the Treasury is now issuing debt. And that's one of the big takeaways that what the chaps at Bridgewater were highlighting is that the pace of debt issuance has not kept up with the size of the deficit, and that intervening or the gap between the two has been made up by pulling cash out of various government programs. But now that process has ended, so the pace with which debt is being issued has to increase. And of course, with the Treasury selling more debt, what that is effectively doing is pulling reserves out of the banking system and hoovering up liquidity from around the economy. Now, there was some questioning in the wider markets over the last 7 or 8 weeks about why hadn't there been a deeper pullback in stock markets as that pace of issuance picked up. Well, what I think we're now starting to see is the realization that it will have a knock-on effect, and that in order to sell all those additional bonds, then investors are right to demand a higher return. So we're seeing yields rising. So I think this is one of the important points. Now, of course, then let's think about, well, what exactly is the Federal Reserve doing? Well, one thing we know for sure is they're not buying any more bonds. So then that's also creating upward pressure on the 10-year yield. Now, when we look at the inflation rate, this is core services less housing. So it's been hovering here around the 4% level for a year. And it is still coming down towards the lower side of the range, but it hasn't broken down yet. But I think it's particularly relevant to highlight that these inflationary pressures started ramping higher in about 1963, and by the time we got into the early 1970s, they had gone up and were at, we'd had a decade, or at least 7 years of inflationary pressures rising. One of the reasons why Nixon closed the gold window was to try and get that inflationary pressure down. And it worked for a brief period of time. But of course, the knock-on effect of that was to also knock back the dollar. So then that put the value of oil or the income that Middle Eastern companies were receiving for the oil they were exporting in a declining dollar and wasn't satisfactory. So then we had the oil crisis, and then it took the full decade and a bit for the inflation rate, service core services ex housing, to come back below the 6% level. So when the Federal Reserve is thinking about the need to get inflationary pressures under control, I think that's what they're thinking about, that they want to ensure that there is a clear route to getting inflationary pressures back down. But I think the much bigger question is not so much what they're willing to do to get inflation back down, but rather what are they going to do subsequently when the economy eventually does slow down? And the Nasdaq is extending its decline in here. So the Nasdaq is now back below the 15,000 level, And it does look quite likely that it is at least going to unwind the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average, so that it'd be at least another 1,000 points on the downside. And I think it's at that point we'll see then where we're going to, where support will in fact be found. Then Apple hasn't been able to hold on to its 3 trillion price mark. It's now also, it's just about, in fact, unwound its overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. Of course, if it sustains a move down through that, that would hold out the prospect of a reversion back down to the lower side of the range. And I did just pay attention to Microchip Technologies today because it had this massive downside key reversal 3 weeks ago, and it continues to extend the decline. But that's a very good example of a failed upside break, and it holds out the prospect then that it is at least going to go back down and test the region of the 1,000-day moving average, which would be a decline of about 15% from where we are right now. Then let's think about, well, what kind of impact is all of this action having on gold? Well, with bond yields rising, then the real yield is also still pushing higher, and gold closed today below the $1,900 level, below the 200-day moving average, below the low put in at the beginning of the month, excuse me, the beginning of July. So this is holding out the prospect now of a deeper process of consolidation, that the move above 2000 has not been sustained, and therefore there is the rising possibility that prices may come back down and test the $1,800 level. Then silver prices have also been under pressure, and I think there is clearly the potential that we're going to see a more volatile period here. And one thing that I think is most especially important to remember is that precious metals are not immune from a rise in volatility. So with stock markets beginning to roll over and real yields pushing on the upside, and I think this is rather important that we have both real yields pushing higher and at a new recovery high, and real yields, in fact, haven't been this high since all the way back here in 2008. Me see if I can make sure that we have the full year showing on the video. So this is a very meaningful move higher. And then, of course, with higher yields and the prospect of less supply of dollars around, then the dollar index is also pushing on the upside here, and it has sustained the move today above the 200-day moving average. Now, it hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and every time it has done this, it has failed. But with yields continuing to push on the upside, we're going to have to see a meaningful change in some of the underlying strength in the economy in order to really begin to put downward pressure on the dollar once more. And then, of course, you can't have one currency going out with going up without others going down. And the Chinese renminbi continues to extend its decline. So these have been dynamic moves over the last couple of weeks, and it is now right in the region of its lows from at the end of 2022. China is experiencing some significant challenges in terms of its growth, and this issue with the property sector is festering. Now, they cut interest rates this week, and there's the prospect that they may begin to provide additional assistance. And the youth unemployment sector, well, that's are the youth unemployment figures, which they're no longer going to print, but it's obviously an important enough factoid that they are paying attention to it. And then, of course, you have the fact that Tencent, its earnings aren't performing particularly well. So even then, the technology sector is suffering. And when we think about Alibaba, then it's also pulling back from the $100 level. So we don't have a lot of evidence that the high technology sector is thriving either. And with the There's a real prospect here that China is going to begin to export deflationary forces. And that could eventually then help to bring interest rates down everywhere else. But we're just not there yet. I think it is quite likely that we're moving into a more volatile period. And the downward pressure that we're seeing in precious metals right now, that's also a more of a risk-off type of environment. Now, the VIX index is bouncing from the lows that were last seen really at the beginning of 2020 and approaching the region of the 200-day moving average. Then let's look at the Nasdaq's volatility as the index is breaking lower. So that it's a lot more volatile and choppy, but it is firming from the 20 level and testing the region of the 200-day moving average. So then the oil market, which had popped on the upside and had broken its sequence of lower rally highs, was down another $1.50 in here today. Now it has broken the sequence of higher reaction lows that's been in place since the end of June, and it is coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average. If this break higher is going to be sustained, then oil will find support within the next dollar. But if it fails here, well, that's going to be a significant upside failure. And it would hold out the prospect of a return back down to the lower side of the range, which is around the $70 level. But then, of course, the big question is that we have a relatively balanced market. And if Chinese demand growth is going to come under some pressure, then perhaps demand growth everywhere else is going to come under some pressure as well. And will OPEC plus be in a position to cut supply enough to deal with that? Then copper prices continue to decline. It's been almost down on consecutive days. And this continues to look like a type 2 top with right-hand extension. I took quite a bit of risk off in here today. I closed out my long position in the gold miners ETF. I initiated it back in March of 2020 and bought around the $20 level, right at the end of, or I guess at the end of the acute panic phase of the pandemic. But as it's coming back down now and approaching my break-even point on the three different positions that I've taken, I said, well, I'm going to just take the profit while I still have one. And then I also I took a loss actually on my silver miners. And I also took losses on both of my silver and my gold leverage longs. So I am taking some leverage off the table with the precious metals sector, because I think that there's the potential here that we could get a bit of a shock, and that some of the bullishness that's been surrounding the sector has been, I think, a little bit misguided. For example, I saw a report today talking about solar panels having 30 grams of, or excuse me, 10 grams of silver in each of the solar panels, and that was the big reason why silver should be going on the upside and it should have this phenomenal bull market. But the reality is that that data has been out of date for about 20 years. And that instead they have about 11 milligrams, and that's way less, and that's not the kind of demand that's ever going to reignite a big bull market in silver. The reason that one would be bullish of silver has much more to do with the clear potential that the response to an impending recession at some point over the next year will be massive monetary accommodation. Now, we're not at the massive monetary accommodation stage just yet. The pace of rundown in central bank balance sheets remains intact. And the fact that the dollar is rebounding right now then that is going to reduce the value of assets sitting on foreign central banks. So not only do we have the clear trend of central banks reducing the size of their balance sheets, but with a stronger dollar, then the total assets of central banks is breaking lower. So this is a meaningful move, and it is something that is going to have a knock-on effect in terms of global liquidity. So I think what we need to be prepared for right now is some additional volatility, and that was the primary reason that I decided to take some risk off the table. But when we think, for example, at looking at some of these European markets, the FTSE 250 is continuing to roll over. Now, when we think about just the broad European markets, the Europe Stoxx Index is now right in the region of the 200-day moving average, and if it's going to find support, it should do so within the next 10 points or so. When we think about the Swiss market, it is also back in an area of potential support. Until quite recently, the banks in Europe had been pushing on the upside, and they have paused. Banks in the UK had a rather large downside downward dynamic just this week, pulling back down through the 200-day moving average. There's certainly been a bit of an all change over the last couple of days, and it is looking like it's going to be easier to make money out of shorts than longs over the next while. So that's also the reason why I've held on to my NASDAQ shorts and indeed my Apple short. And then, of course, it's another question. Will Bitcoin hold on here, or will it break lower? So I am very mildly underwater on my long in Bitcoin, and I'm still in positive territory with my long in Riot Platforms, but I'm not going to sit through a deeper pullback on Bitcoin. And if it doesn't find support soon, well, then I'm just going to take that one off as well. I think in this kind of environment, it is rather it's probably better to simply run one's winners and start cutting out some of the losers, because I think we are heading into a deeper process of volatility and mean reversion overall. And of course, then there are some companies that are really very overextended, but have so far held on reasonably well. So Nvidia, for example, was in fact up today and continues to hold the $400 level. Now, if this contention that this is a higher plateau is in fact correct, well, then the 400 level will continue to hold. And I think that's certainly something to, or it's being certainly supported by the enthusiasm around artificial intelligence. I've done quite a lot of experimenting with ChatGPT, and I think it is successful in writing drafts. And I think in many respects, that's probably good enough, and that's something that's going to enhance productivity for a lot of white-collar workers. And then all people have to do is to provide the value added themselves. And that is, of course, where it's just like in markets. That's why I was thinking today that what you have from artificial intelligence is basically a moving average. It gives you an idea of the direction of travel, but it doesn't tell you exactly where the price is. And it gives you a lot of information about the market, but not the kind of information at the margin. And prices are set at the margin. And the value add that white collar workers provide isn't in the mundane, but in the expertise that they can bring to bear. And if artificial intelligence takes over, or at least makes the mundane easier, then it allows for greater value creation from expertise. So I think that is a reasonable argument. But lots of companies are now building their own AI chips. And you even have Google, where they are using AI to design the chips. And Google was in negative territory today, despite the fact that San Francisco has now allowed driverless taxis to buy both Waymo and GM's Cruise. And I don't think that Google is really getting a lot of benefit from the invention of this technology. And GM is getting none at all. And the share is coming back down to test the lower side of the range. When I was in Phoenix over the summer, I saw that Waymo, it costs about the same as Uber. Well, you'd think that if there is the imminent potential rollout of the autonomous vehicles, well, then a company like Uber is going to really be under pressure. And the share did post a downside weekly key reversal 2 weeks ago, and so far it has followed through on the downside. If Google and GM, in fact, have autonomous vehicles and they can successfully roll them out in more cities, well, that's not going to be good news for Uber. And of course, Uber had to shelve its own autonomous vehicle project several years ago already. And of course, Tesla has been experimenting with its own autonomous vehicle program. The share continues to decline because they're experiencing quite a lot of price competition. And several of the big Chinese companies can beat Tesla on a price comparison. And they have many of the same battery technology. Of course, China is by far and away the leader in both battery construction and development. And of course, that represents a medium-term headwind for a company like Tesla. So I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.